the 36th, 40th water cooler, July. Is it July?
Yes, it is.
July 2017. Thank you so much for coming. So nice to see your faces. I can't see them. That is a lie. For those of you playing at home, we're sitting on an amazing set. It's just amazing. There's clouds in the sky. Wonder what show's on here. Well, I'll tell you, because I'm in it. It's looking at stuff in class, and you should book your tickets because it's a good time. A little bit of a character study of small town New Zealand. So you're welcome. Thanks for coming, guys. Tonight's theme for the water cooler is growing pains. Has everyone been to the water cooler before?
No.
No. Okay, well, great. You're in for a treat. We end the night with a dance that you'll all learn.
We know it, so by the way.
Just kidding. So we've got some amazing guests tonight. My very good friend, Kate McGill. Oh, she's a hottie. Nathan Joe, also a hottie, for those playing at home. And Amanda Billing. Wow. Ooh, what a hot group of people. I feel ugly. Anyway, theme tonight is growing pains. Who's had growing pains before? I did, once. In my heart. No. I did. You get them in your shins, eh? Growing pains. What are they called? Shin splints. Is that different from growing pains?
Yeah, right.
Cool. Thank God Amanda Billing is here. Otherwise, we'd be all talking about different things, and we can't have that. Growing, I didn't like growing up. I'm quite happy the age I am now. I'm 34. Thank you. And I was so stoked when I got to 30. I was like, oh, thank God, finally, because like being a teenager and in your 20s, I was like, this is the worst. Like, if someone was like, I'm going to give you $1 million and you can be 18 again, I'd be like, you can stick that up your butt. Would I? I might. I'd have to think about it. Being a teenager for me was really hard work. At one point I had glasses, braces, and a perm. Let it be known that I had no boyfriends. That was a high point. I think when you're a teenager as well, you like go through this period of like trying to find yourself and like who you are and like, you know, what you wear and stuff. And I had a phase where I wore like old man pants, like, or Dickies. Do you remember Dickies? Yeah. And then I'd have my boxers, because I'd wear boxers, satin boxers. Remember them? Good to sweat in.
Did you have the ones with the Warner Brothers cartoon?
No, but they were good, eh?
Taz and stuff.
Yeah, Taz, that's right, yeah. No, I didn't have Looney Tunes boxes or anything, but I had them showing above my Dickies, over my undies, so, you know, two pairs of undies, got to be prepared. And I had really short hair as well, spiky at the back, long at the front. Still didn't have a boyfriend. Still don't. If there's anyone out there in the market tonight, I've got to stop doing that. It's not a way to. It's a way to meet a murderer. But yeah, being a teenager is awful. I think that saying, you know, that saying, the youth is wasted on the young, is so fucking true. Like, you spend so much time just being a dick when you could be like, oh, I could be having a really great time. And being a cool kid, and anyway. Here's something that didn't grow on me, my feet. These are kids' shoes. I'm not even lying. I was like, I want some Air Force Ones because I'm 34. Like, what the actual, anyway. And I was like, I want some Air Force Ones. And they were like, you don't fit them. You have to have a kid's shoe. So, yep, my feet didn't grow. Growing pains. What else can I tell you? Like I said, turning 30, I was stoked to turn 30, right? Stoked about it. I was real stoked. I was like, finally, things will all come together. Still waiting. But I've got friends that are coming up to 30 now. Like, one of my friends is about to turn 29, and she's like, oh my God, this is the more, like, oh, my life is over. And I'm like, oh, you wait. But it's not, like, I think being... It's funny, like, growing up, who says you have to grow up? Who says? Not bloody Peter Pan. Anyway, that's pretty much all I've got here on my little notes. But oh my God, have we got some guests. Oh my God. We're all going to go around the room and say an awful growing up story. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that. I'm going to introduce our first guest for the evening. Oh my God, she's gorgeous. If you could just see her, you can. But our podcasters can't. Her name is Kate McGill. She's a very good friend of mine. Please come and join me up here, Kate. Please. Make her feel very welcome. Thank you. Hello, dear.
Hello.
Hello, dear. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right.
That's lovely.
Yeah,
but happy to be here. Great. That's great. That's what we like. Kate, here's something I ask everyone I meet.
Okay.
That's... Okay. What do you write on your customs form when you're coming in? What do you do? What's your occupation?
Oh, it changes depending on where I'm going and how, like, confident I am.
Mm.
So sometimes I write artist.
Nice.
And then sometimes I write furniture saleswoman.
Yes. the or, life of an actor.
Yeah. Or temp.
Yes.
Or waitress.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, that's kind of it.
You could write chameleon.
I could write chameleon. I could.
You could.
I don't know how well that would go down, like going into
America,
LA or something like that. But like, ma'am, where do you work? Chameleon's like, I don't know.
The chameleon factory. Yeah.
It's a chameleon factory. It's a very New Zealand thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of chameleons here.
Yes.
You just can't see them.
Very good, Donna. Very good.
So... I know this, but you're an actor.
Yes.
A very good actor.
Thank you.
A very good writer.
Okay.
And you're a masseuse. Recently
a
qualified
therapist.
Massage therapist.
Yeah.
Because masseuse have like sexy
connotations. It's just a bit dodgy, yeah. Like when someone's like, I'm just going to a masseuse, like I automatically think, oh, hello.
You're getting a happy ending.
A little bit of a happy time there.
A little bit of a happy time.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
So you've just graduated?
Yeah, from Well Park in Grey Lynn.
Lovely.
Yeah, as a relaxation therapist. I'm actually working at Matworks, which you can get a discount with Thanks25 on the website. New clinic, just started up. Have a nice wee rub. Got to work on my pitch.
I'm in. 25. It sounds like a the email address you'd start as a you know, when emails first came out and you're like, I'm gonna have an email address.
What was yours? What was your first email address?
It was DEE_B50@hotmail.com. I was like, how many other, there's 49 more DBs before me. What was yours?
Good. I will play Mary Warren at hotmail.com.
Who's Mary Warren?
She's in The Crucible.
Oh, right.
It's
and
a very...
did you play Mary Warren?
I did. I
so
did.
You get rid of that email.
I
did.
Have to get rid of it. I did. Now it's very simple, very generic. I'm not going to say it on this because it's a podcast.
And your phone number. No. What is there anything you want to tell us before you get going on your story? Like any disclaimers or like little like watch out for this bit or
No, but I want to say publicly that I went through the Dickies phase too and had the exact same haircut, modelled off Michelle Williams from Dawson's Creek.
Oh,
except when I got severely overweight at age 17, it was a really, really not very good look with the Dickies and the thing. And the
well, I just don't think that's ever.
No, it isn't. It wasn't a good look.
No.
That early 2000s, late 1990s.
Terrible.
Awful.
Mm.
Poor us. But
wasn't
lucky you.
Fault. Anyway, would you like to tell us your story, Kate McGill?
I'll have a home.
All right, dear.
Okay. Growing pains. I think this will all be quite different from all of us, but who here, would I have to have a little bit more, well, who here had Lucky Book Club or Scholastic Books as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, so some of you know what I'm talking about. For those of you who don't know, it's like a kiddie catalogue for books. So it's pre-Book Depository, pre-Amazon. Lucky Book Club would be ordered at the beginning of the month, and then sometime in the next 6 months, you'd get your books. And it was like 75% books and 25% crap, like little doodacks you'd get on a keychain and like the, you know, ye olden day equivalent of fidget spinners. And I'd get my catalogue and painstakingly circle my favourites, knowing full well that I'd only end up with, you know, a few in my selection. And my dad's a writer and my mum, for want of a better term, is an actress. So I loved books and I would order the classics, man, like Babysitter's Club, number 18, Stacey and the Lost Pencil, Goosebumps 552, The Ghost Wardrobe. You get me, it was high-end quality stuff. And I'd give the catalogue to my mum, because she was the money earner at the time, and she'd have a look. She'd take out anything she deemed inappropriate or asinine, and she'd sign a cheque, she'd put it all into a sealed envelope and give it back to me. I'd give her a cuddle, and the next day I'd hand it over to my teacher at school. Now, at my school, it was my second school, and I was last on the roll because I'd turned up late. So when the Lucky Book Club order would come in, Mr. Fleming would read out the name of the lucky children and then their books, and he would read it out in a low, monotonous tone. And just so you don't hate Mr. Fleming, he was one of those teachers, we all have them, those ones that you really adore and you remember and you invite to your 21st birthday. I did. I made him give a speech. I loved him so much. I had a crush on him and tried to get him to divorce his wife. But anyway, that's another story. But at the time, Mr. Fleming, it was a really different time when he was reading out the names of the Lucky Book Clubs. So you'd be sitting there and half an hour later and we'd only be up to C, and it would be like Manake Cook, The Twits, and Nutting for Beginners. And it was really painful for an impatient young girl like myself. But up until age 9, it was pretty much smooth sailing. Got my Babysitter's Club annual. Got my Paul Jennings, and I was contemplating being a writer / actress / deep sea diver. Actually, still gunning for that. And then one fateful day, Mr. Fleming read out my name. Kate McGill, Babysitter's Club number 105, Mallory and the First Date, Goosebumps 62, Demon Goggles, and My Period and Me. Shock rippled throughout my Standard 4 class. Does Kate have her period? Does she know what sex is? Is Kate becoming a woman? The answer was, of course, no. I was mortified. But this pattern continued for the next year, and Mum was working hard, really hard, and doing really well as a producer at the time. And she was away a lot, so she'd sign my Lucky Book Club and then disappear for a while, and all of a sudden I was turning up with these books about growing up, unusual hair growth, and the birds and the bees. Now, don't get me wrong, Mum did try to talk to me about this stuff too. There's one occasion I can remember a few years later where she drew a diagram. We were in the sunroom, and she drew a diagram of the vulva, specifically of the clitoris, after a conversation about three holes. But at age 9, I wasn't ready for this shit. And one time I came home after being accosted by a bunch of friends for my sex book, and Mum was home, which was a rare occasion after school, and I came home from school shaking like a leaf. "Hello, darling," my mum said in her deep Judy Dench-esque voice. I said nothing. I pulled out the book silently and attempted to tear it apart in a fart. I attempted to tear a fart in front of her. Tear apart the book. The truth really was that I wasn't ready for this. I have always been someone who, even when trying to do the opposite, to try and be part of the fold, has marched to the beat of my own drum. When I got my period at 13 years old, I cried, wailing for hours and hours. And as it was during my witchcraft phase, I got my crystals out and I cast a spell so that I wouldn't get it for a year. I made it 6 months. I didn't have sex till I was 21 years old. On my birthday, in fact, it was the middle of winter with a lovely man that I was in a play with. And I decided that the mystery had eluded me long enough and I wanted to get it over and done with. And all throughout my first time, I lay there wearing one of those hats with the flaps that they have in Fargo. You know, with the sheepskin and the little ties underneath. And I wore it throughout the whole experience. And I remember being very silent and very still, thinking like an internal monologue in my drunken brain going, oh, well, it's not painful and it's not amazing. It's actually quite underwhelming. Until like it dawned on me that I actually had to do something too, instead of just lying there wearing a hat. Poor guy. He moved to the Philippines not long after that. The thing is, what I'm coming to here is that I think my growing pains are only just starting to ease. And this is where the lols come out and the truth comes in. Because I think my growing pains are all related to an event. When I was a little girl, 8 years old, someone who was known to my family sexually abused me. Within days or a week of this happening, my grandmother promptly died, and I never told anyone. So a bout of serious depression at age 18 had me divulge this information to a counsellor who, though very comforting, was seriously inept when dealing with a 10-year-old's secret. And then about a year and a half ago, through another event that happened in my life, all these memories came flooding back. And I was suddenly forced to deal with these thoughts, feelings, grief, and growing pains from what had happened to me. And I still actually haven't told my parents. So as I've been working through this and facing my history, I realised that there is an all too common culture of keeping silent, of hoping things will go away, of finding safety in your own circles and your own experience. Now, I do not blame my parents. They are wonderful. They are loving. They did their best to create a wonderful, safe environment for me. And this is a terrible, terrible thing to happen to anyone, let alone a child. But the very sad thing is, even though my experience is unique to me, in New Zealand, 1 in 5 women or girls will experience a serious sexual assault. And 1 in 7 men will encounter sexual violation before they reach adulthood. These are just statistics, just the numbers that we've got. And these numbers rip my heart in two. And I think it's time now for me not to be silent. It's too common an occurrence. It needs to be talked about, and the guilty, the villains and the cowards need to get their karma, and this cycle needs to stop, and so the survivors can live and live well. I think that for many, growing pains, metaphorical or figurative, continue long into adulthood as we're constantly negotiating what sort of human we want to be in this world. And as I move into the future, I want to acknowledge my past, but not let it dictate this forward momentum as I speak up and take action, finally. So at 32 years old, thank you, I'm starting to redefine myself, and that is someone who has compassion for her friends, her family, and for 8-year-old me, who keeps quiet while tearing up books. Thank you. Thank you, Donna.
Thanks for sharing that. Very honest and very brave of you. So thank you. And if anyone, if this has affected anyone, I encourage them to talk to someone, because I don't want to take what you've said lightly. So
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Kate. Growing up shitty, eh? Can be quite shitty. But there's good things.
Very good things.
I want to hear... I remember Lucky Book Club very clearly. And Babysitter's Club and Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Like, the best, right? Mm-hmm. But I actually want to hear about your witchcraft phase. A little bit.
Oh, God. So I had a friend in Wellington, Jean, who probably listens, I'm pretty sure she listens to this, who I think she might even still be a witch. But she definitely, kind of slid some books at me, like, read this, it's about white witches. And I was like, oh my God, witches, no. And she was like, no, white witches are good witches. And I was like, magic, cool.
Oh, Glinda.
Oh my God.
Glinda the witch?
Glinda the Witch.
Yeah.
I mean, I was pretty much doing it, I think, because I was like, this could be the fast track to getting an Oscar, or...
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, just things like that are really, like, important and not at all superficial that I really want.
Yeah. Because you think, like, when you're a teenager and that sort of thing, you've kind of, like... You kind of grasp onto things that you think...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was all about creating different images. And, like, you know, we talked about... Dickies and then like Michelle Williams look before. I also went through a phase. I was like, right, I'm a large teenager, I'm gonna start my own fashion label for plus size teenagers. And I made my dad take all these photos of me in the garden wearing outfits that I had made. So there was a brown cowl neck lace top.
I can't even imagine what that would look like.
Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous. Yeah. And you remember when denim had, like, that printing on it that was, like, twink?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was that with a tulle
had no chance, really, did we?
What do you mean?
What?
It was gorgeous. I've still got that.
I bet you do.
Still got that. Absolutely. Bring it back. It was going to be called Elk Clothing.
Nice.
And I wasn't going to tell anyone what it meant, but it meant eat less, Kate. So I wasn't really a pioneer for plus size teenagers. I was desperate to be thin.
But you'd know.
I'd know. I'd be wearing Elk Clothing. I'd be like, little did you know that your money has bought me a stomach stapling.
I love it. Thank you very much, Kate.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Give it up for Kate, we go. Sit on the warm seat. Nathan Joe.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. I'm pretty nervous.
Oh, no need. Look at these lovely people. Look at their...
That's okay. I had a cider and I have no alcohol tolerance, so I'm just a bit like...
Great.
Ooh.
You might share more than you meant to. Nathan, what would you write on your customs form?
I wrote for the first time last year, playwright, because we were going to a playwright conference, and I felt like I can totally justify this.
Right.
Prior to that, I either said like media operator, because I work full-time or part-time back then at a television station, and it's just super vague, and I don't have to talk about it.
Right. There's something about writing that first, I think anyway, going from writing like... barista or like waitress to writing like actor or script writer or playwright.
Definitely.
Right?
I almost wanted someone to be like, but are you? So I could be like, yes, I am. Sort of confidently.
Yeah, totally. It's like a mind shift, right? So you're a playwright. You had a play on recently here at the Basement.
Yeah, I had it. It was on a few months ago in this space called Like Sex.
Ooh.
Yes, it is. And everyone's always like, what does the title mean? Is it, do you like sex? Like sex, as in kind of like sex? And I'm always like, I don't know. One of the actors suggested it during a workshop, and I just rolled with it because it makes people ask questions.
Great.
But,
that's
yeah.
good. That's
and it was,
good.
A, it was a good season.
Was it kind of devised as well?
It was part of Young and Hungry in Wellington last year, and then... Chai Ling, the director, and I sort of worked to create a semi-devised piece around it.
Cool, very cool. How did it go?
Good. We did it with seven actors, all acting graduates, recent acting graduates, so
Great.
That was really cool.
And are you writing anything at the moment?
sort of.
Tinkering.
Yeah.
No, you're doing. You're doing.
I'm tinkering, okay. As you said. I am definitely tinkering away.
Great.
But I like to think I'm taking a hiatus. That's what I'm telling myself.
Yeah. Letting that inspiration come.
Sabbatical, yeah. I'm just gestating until the idea hits me.
Nice. Gestating. That makes me think of laying eggs. I don't know why.
I guess that's what I'm doing then.
Great. Little creative eggs. Anyway, did you want to say anything about what you're about to say before you get up there?
Just that I'm embarrassed that this is what I'm saying it about now.
Don't be. We love a good story.
In a good way, a good embarrassment.
Great.
Like Larry David.
Oh, great. Excellent. If you're ready, Nathan Joe, everyone.
I've always thought that bringing a kid into the world is, you know, pretty cruel. But at least, especially, that's how I saw it growing up in Christchurch. I mean, it wasn't that my life was particularly bad. It was pretty conventional and middle class, actually. Like, looking back now, I can see how lucky I was, la-da-da. But my parents gave my sister and I, you know, everything we needed, most of what we wanted. And besides having to work at the family fish and chip shop every Friday, it wasn't that bad. But as a gay Chinese Kiwi boy who sort of sucked at everything growing up, I felt very wronged at life. Because as far as I was concerned, I never had consented to being born, never consented to being born this particular way, and never consented to the conditions of my life. I was quite bitter. Because whenever I looked outside at the horizon, I didn't see a realistic future for me. I was always trying to live in the present really awkwardly, basically. I was an escapist, predominantly. I had to find myself in other mediums, other things, other films, other video games. My diet was predominantly made up of things like Pokemon, Sailor Moon, Charmed, and Final Fantasy. My first crush wasn't a real boy, but Disney's Aladdin, because he had that, you know, charming fucking smile and that sexy shirtless vest thing. And, you know, whereas for him the world was his oyster, mine felt decidedly small and suburban. If anything, I felt more like Jasmine trapped in her chambers. But the difference was I had no Aladdin to turn to, and I wasn't even brave enough to run away from home. I mean, that's how I saw it anyway. That would have been fucking stupid now. That was at least until World of Warcraft. For anyone who doesn't know what that is, it was a... World of Warcraft, or WoW for short, was a MMORPG, or multi-massive online role-playing game, where millions of people worldwide could log in, create like a fantasy character. You were all synced up, the world was expansive, and basically it was non-linear. You could do anything. It was literally, you could fight monsters with other gamers, you could create little guilds, little teams. I mean, up until that point, the only gaming I had experience with was very linear. It was single player, Final Fantasy, Zelda, stuff like that. Here, I got to interact with other people. I got to customize and choose my own character. When I logged into World of Warcraft, it wasn't just playing a game. I was logging out of real life, so to speak. For all intents and purposes, I was the character. I chose his name. I chose his race. I chose his profession. I chose the adventures. And we were one. In my case, I happened to be a gnome. It was one of the few circumstances where I felt comfortable being short at that period of my life. I was like, hey, as a gnome, being short is a given, not an insecurity. And I was a gnome, so I wasn't Chinese. I wasn't a Chinese Kiwi who didn't feel like he fit in. I just was a gnome. No one asked me, you know, where do you come from? I come from the town where the gnomes come from. That was that simple. My age was everyone else's age. Speaking of, And I was a mage. I was a mage gnome, and people thought I was older than I was. They just assumed that, and that was nice. As a teenager, I found that really gratifying.
It flattered me, basically.
Because real life seemed really banal and disappointing and disorganized compared to the World of Warcraft. The world of the game was vast and open-ended. You were given a map and directions and guidelines, but you could do with them however you wanted. Whereas, you know, real life seemed vague and ambiguous with its instructions. You know, I could kill monsters, get loot, level up, and that's what was all that was expected of me there. Here, if I got bored, I couldn't create a new character. I was stuck with this, and I was not comfortable with this back then. Looking back, I think I needed something like that, needed World of Warcraft or something similar. Because at the time, I loved the game. It was my life, and that was sort of the problem. I mean, when I say it was a problem, it was about 2 years in, and by that time, I could say that, you know, I was staying up really, really fucking late, like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. in the morning. I was still playing on a weekday. My mum would have to storm up the stairs, pissed off, rightfully so, and would get into these petty arguments. I would sometimes pretend I was going to bed, go back right up. She would see me there, just a thing, back and forth of me pretending I was going to bed and I wasn't. She'd end up having to pull the plug just so I would shut the game off. And I would snap. I was really just not a good, nice son at that point, just put it lightly. I neglected my friends as well. That was a big thing. I preferred the company of these strangers online because the expectation there was we worked together, we defeated the boss, and there wasn't any weird subtext or awkward silences. The silences were good because in the silences, you were just killing a monster. It wasn't any sort of like, oh, what am I going to say next? You just didn't say anything, and it was fine. It was okay. And worst of all, it got to the point where I was actively trying not to leave the seat. I got to the point where I was literally like, I'm not going to piss, shit, sleep. I will just stay here as long as physically possible until my body commands me otherwise. It got to the point where I was like, Nathan, you do not need to poop. Pooping is overrated. You've got the game. And I could literally, and it's disgusting, but I could literally feel my bladder and my bowels just like fill up slowly. And I was like, okay, I don't need to poop. I don't need to poop. And eventually, luckily, I decided I did need to poop. I hadn't gone to the point where I did anything too disgusting, but it was, you know, psychologically, I felt like my physical body was a barrier. It was something to be overcome to play the game. And, you know, I was sitting there. You would see me, and my parents would see me sitting there like this bullfrog lying behind the screen, the keyboard right there, and I was just like that, just like inflated, not doing anything. There was like a mold in the office chair. It was just like, ugh. And that went on for about 2 to 3 years with the game. I was playing it 6 to 8 hours a day if I could, and anything that got in the way of that, I totally just resented. And then it hit me at a certain point. This is really unhealthy. This is like nuts. And I wasn't seeing the friends I really liked as much anymore. And I couldn't figure out what it was that I, as a kid, you don't really realize why it is you're doing these things. I mean, with retrospect, I can go, oh, I was just really unhappy. But at the time, I didn't feel unhappy. I just felt like I was having a good time. You know, I was just avoiding bullshit and people who were really annoying and people who didn't understand me. And the people who really understood me were the people who understood this little gnome, or when I created a new character, the elf, night elf priestess and stuff like that, even though all we talked about was how we're going to defeat the next boss. But that, to me, was real camaraderie. And I never really overcame that, and I feel like I'm still... That sort of side of me still haunts me, the desire to escape. And I don't think I'll ever really grow out of that. I mean, I was lucky enough that I had really cool friends and I had social occasions that did tempt me out of it. There was no epiphany moment where I was like, oh, this is so bad, this is an addiction. But I just slowly drifted away from it, I realised. And I feel like I'm very lucky for that, because the rest of my teenage years were, you could find me doing similar escapist things, just healthier ones, like watching movies instead of playing World of Warcraft. Like, I saw movies that, for some reason, were the opposite of escapism, like as pretentious as possible. That was sort of my remedy. Like, before, the old me, the one playing the video games, couldn't handle reality, so now I'm going to chase after the most pretentious sounding titles, the hardest to pronounce film directors. You know, I would be like, sign me up for some Yasujiro Ozu, Rainer Versant, Fassbinder, Michael Haneke, Lars von Trier, Pedro Almodovar, and that was what my cure was at the time. The harder it was to say the name, the cooler I felt, the more I felt like I had recovered. But I do look back at those times playing World of Warcraft with the, you know, appropriate amount of embarrassment and cringe. But I also remember it fondly, because I think I did need that at the time to crawl out of my hole. I think everyone needs that. I still think about the little gnome, and I'm not entirely sure if I can, you know, right now go back and reactivate the account. I won't do it, but it crosses my mind every now and then, and how nice that would be to play the game casually, or so I say. And I know that I wouldn't be who I am if I hadn't gone through this weird, depressing cycle of escapism and overcome it and realise real life is sort of okay. Because I'm thankful that I had somewhere to hide when the real world got to be a bit too much, because sometimes it is, and everyone deserves that place they can feel safe. But I'm even more grateful that I eventually decided the real world wasn't so bad either. My name is Nathan Joe, and I was a teenage World of Warcraft addict.
Thanks, Nathan. My brother used to play World of Warcraft, actually. Shout out. Do you still play games at all, or not?
I play like video games occasionally, but it's so much more controlled, and it's so much more, I wouldn't say responsible, but there's a sense of restraint, definitely. Like, I played, you know, the latest Zelda game, and I got really into that, but there was a certain point where I was like, you know what, this, I'm done, I've got better things to do, and as fun as this is, I can come back to it.
Cool.
I mean, the problem with World of Warcraft was that it was always going,
mm-hmm.
The game was never off.
So it was an online thing.
It's an online thing.
Yeah.
So it was always going. There was always someone on there. And that's why it was so hard to put down. And there was no ending.
Right.
I mean, it's still going to this day.
Yeah.
It's as popular as ever. And it's like, oh my God.
Especially because, like, when in the middle of the night, someone in America, say.
Oh, exactly. And I was on, I think, an American channel, because it's tons of different servers. So for me, a lot of the peak time was actually at night.
Yeah.
And because of that, I was always trying to stay up as late as possible. And I had just the worst sleep during high school.
Yeah.
I did not sleep much in high school. I feel like I'm a very tired person now because
of
it.
It's like banked it all up.
Banked it all up.
Do you reckon, like, because now I think kids or whatever...
Oh, the kids these days, they're always looking down at the phones.
Do you know what I mean though? Like,
kids, eh? Well, it is funny you say that, because I was like the only person in my school in my year that I knew that really played it.
Really?
Because it was sort of a slightly older than, like, it wasn't necessarily like a young teenager's game back, at least not when I was playing it,
mm-hmm.
in New Zealand. But I see my cousins now, and they lap that shit up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're on that stuff 24/7. And I guess it's more the thing. Whereas I think for me, it was like kind of fucked up.
Yeah. Because it's accessible now all the
time,
right?
And everyone's doing it. Whereas none of my friends were playing specifically World of Warcraft.
Right.
I mean, I think I just got really, you know, I jumped on the bandwagon way too early and got way too obsessed. And I was like one of the, I think, earliest people in New Zealand my age to play it. Just because I saw it and I saw the poster and I was like, wow, an orc. I guess that's exciting. And I got my dad somehow to pay for the subscription.
Right.
And then I think he regretted it ever since.
Didn't cancel it, though.
Didn't cancel it. Well, the thing is, working at the fish and chip shop, I got pocket money. And that's where the pocket money went to. It went to becoming a gnome.
Right. There's worse things.
There are worse
things. That you could spend your pocket money on. I think my brother had World of Warcraft on CD-ROM. Is that a thing?
I think you had to install it from CD-ROM.
So oh, okay, right.
I think, yeah.
Oh, shut up, man. It's like a DVD.
It was like four CD-ROMs you had to install before you played the game.
Right.
Yeah, it was weird.
Like, what was the name of the encyclopedia that you used to get on the CD-ROM?
Encarta.
Encarta.
Yeah.
Don't pretend like you know, Todd. That's how I used to... Do you know Encarta? It's like Wikipedia, but not as good. And you'd have to put a CD into your computer. Anyway,
yes,
it's a long story.
Sounds pretty sure.
It was very limited. Cool, yeah.
Yeah.
I used to play Commander Keen.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what that... No. Anyway, thank you so much, Nathan. Have you got anything coming up at the moment that you want to shout out to?
Hope my hiatus ends and I get a script finished.
Mate, I believe in it. I believe there's maybe a script with a gnome in it.
Very inspired.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
You can be the gnome.
Oh, thank you.
You get to play me.
Great. thank you very much, Nathan Joe, for everyone. And now we have another hottie. After Nathan, Amanda Billing. Everyone,
hello.
Please welcome Amanda. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm slightly a little squiggly in my tummy, in my chest, a little bit nervous.
Did you eat something? Oh no,
just a little bit nervous.
It's the mulled wine.
The mulled
downstairs.
Wine. What are you up to these days?
I heard someone refer to it as I have a portfolio of activities that I do. Yes, that's what you call it now when you're mostly unemployed and you do lots of stuff to keep yourself busy so that you have things to tell people when they say, so what are you up to these days?
Like gardening.
No.
Living
in an apartment, don't garden. Yeah. My geraniums are just coping with winter at the moment. Mm. What do I do? I paint stuff. I sometimes do voice work.
Cool.
I sometimes, I don't know, I guess I've just started a new kind of acting job, but I signed a non-disclosure agreement the other day, so I can't talk about it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yay for work.
Yay!
As an actress.
So would you put actress on your...
I have done that.
Yes.
And but I took a deep breath before I did it. I was like... actress, and then we sat there quietly in my airplane chair just kind of beaming at myself going I did it. I've written artist before, but I started painting sort of consistently a few months ago, and now I can really feel like, you know, the visual artist sort of feels
very
a bit
cool.
More like what I guess am,
yeah,
as well as all sorts of other things.
So what medium do you
paint?
Yeah.
Yes, paint. Or, acrylic.
Acrylic,
say.
Cool.
Just because oil takes ages to dry.
Yeah.
But there are upsides and downsides, but it's very exciting. It's a new thing for me. Well, an old thing for me, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do that sort of thing. I was one of the arty kids at school, and then when I left school, I stopped being an arty kid until I turned about 27.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Took a break from being arty for about a decade.
Cool. Well, I suppose acting is art.
yes, but I wasn't taught yes. Yes, it is. Yes, all of the arts.
But if you're going to be, you know,
yeah, artist with a capital A.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
For
yeah.
me, anyway.
Yeah. What do you paint?
I like painting portraits. Mm-hmm. I like painting landscapes. I like painting abstract things. I don't know. I just turn up at the studio and go, what do I feel like doing today? And
do you have a studio?
I do.
Cool.
Yes. It's very cool. I feel like a grown up. Hey, that's a bit grown up, having a studio.
Is it in your house?
No. That's the reason why I got a studio, because my place is so small that it was doing my head in trying to paint at home. I was scared that it was going to get paint all over my nice couch.
Yes.
And there was crap like I was set up in my lounge, and it was like I would come out in the morning and go, I can't relax. It's just shit everywhere.
Yeah. I used to paint at school.
Used to?
And I'd get paint all over my dickies.
All over your dickies? All over your dickies.
All over my dickies.
Yes.
My dicky birds.
I don't have dickies. I'm quite enjoying that little walk down memory lane, though. I was... but I did have, what were they called? 508s. Does anyone remember 508s? They were like the widest leg Levi's that you could possibly get. I wore them, I wanted to wear them with a hypercolour t-shirt, possibly some Barker's track pants. I had a pair of those.
Oh, yes.
That whole late 90s thing is quite fun.
But the old flares are coming back in, aren't they?
Yes, apparently
they're coming back in.
Blah.
Should have kept them.
I know.
Fashion, that's fashion, what they tuned in for, isn't it, everybody listening to this podcast? 1999 fashion.
If anyone needs some fashion advice, they need to come to me.
They totally do, baby, nailing it.
That's my thigh.
Yes. For everybody out there in the podcast world, it's corrugated. Her thigh is currently corrugated. It's quite nice to feel that.
My jeans are corrugated. I just want to put that out there.
Oh, sorry. You're just
sitting
in
nude
clothes.
In your...
That's true. She's not naked. Yet.
Oh. Hello. Need a nude...
Hello.
Nude model?
I do, actually.
Okay.
Ha-ha! Take you up on that, babes.
Oh, my God. What's happening? Is there anything you would like to say before you launch into your...
No, but I'm sure that I should just... I'll just get out there.
Yeah, great. Amanda Billing.
Thanks. I'll take my glasses off. I'm reading off my phone. Hopefully I can read what I wrote. Yes, I can. You guys will probably... here in what I have to say, some stuff that's common to the three of us this evening, I think. Tonight seems to me to be about talking about growing pains, but also being really honest about shit that is, you know, not easy to talk about. And that's partly what mine's about. Hopefully I'll be as funny as these guys, because they've been very, very entertaining. But we'll have to see, because my story is really cool in the end, but bits of it really weren't. So when I focused less on the growing pains part of my invitation to this thing, and focused on the bit in the invitation that said trial by fire. So what sort of trial by fire have you been through? And I thought, well, I've got some stories about that stuff. One in particular, but I thought to myself, all right, trial by fire, I'm going to look that up. And according to Google, according to Encarta, no, Google, a trial by fire is an experience in which a trainee becomes a hardened professional, an experience which tests an individual's commitment, courage, strength, resolve, and so on. And in Amanda speak, I realised, I was thinking about it today as I was driving around, for me it means the stakes are really high and I'm not ready because I don't really know how to do this shit. That's what a trial by fire feels like. Now, I've been through, when I was reflecting on this, I realised that I've been through quite a few in my life. They've been mostly to do with my professional life. The ones that come to mind anyway. And so the first time was when I was, I used to be a high school teacher. I went to university not knowing what I was going to do with my life. So I studied a whole bunch of stuff that I liked. When I came out at the end, I was like, what do I do now? So I'd been told that I would make a good teacher. And so I went to teachers college and I got a diploma. And I decided it would be a really good idea to apply for this really great job at a school called St. Margaret's in Christchurch. And the job wasn't an entry-level job. It was a full-time teacher's job. So I'd never been a high school teacher before, and I went into having five classes. I was the only teacher who taught sixth form. So I was a brand new teacher. I had this class of sixth form students. I was the only person who was going to teach them about geography. So that was my first kind of trial by fire. I lied about how old I was so that the girls wouldn't know that I was only like 3 or 4 years older than them, because I felt like I had to like be a grown-up, but they could totally see right through it. The second one that springs to mind is when I came up to Auckland eventually, because teaching burnt me out, I met a friend of mine called Heath, and we were talking about acting, and he said, oh, I went to Unitech and I feel like directing a play, so I'm going to do this play. And I said, oh, I used to act when I was in school. And he said, well, do you want to audition? So I did, and I was a high school teacher at the time, still doing relief teaching, no idea what to do with my life. And I auditioned and I got the part, and I found myself in a rehearsal room with a bunch of Unitech graduates. I hadn't been on stage since I was 17. And I was 26, 27. So I was feeling like a total newbie, a real upstart. Heath handed me a copy of Peter Buckworth's About Acting in front of everybody, and I was sitting there going, okay, great, I can learn it all from a book. This is good. I ended up getting an agent. I ended up getting a role on Shortland Street. I had no idea how the hell that happened. And that was a trial by fire, turning up on set. I'd never had a dramatic role before. I'd hardly done anything on television, and here I am playing a core cast character. I'd signed a 12-month contract. I knew that this person that I was playing was going to be amazing, and I had no idea what I was doing. But I just had to go. Someone said action. I just had to do it. The next time was when I did a production of the Threepenny Opera with the Silo Theatre. It was a musical. It was musical theatre. I hadn't done that since I was like 17. To be standing up on a table holding a microphone in my hand in a white dress singing Pirate Jenny. I was freaking my shit out. I'd never done these things before. But and every trial by fire up until the most important one that I'm about to tell you about, they'd all been about taking on a new professional challenge. They'd been about a new job, a new experience, which was characterized by being a bit scared but also excited. But the biggest trial by fire that I went through recently was when my character on that soap opera died. Now, this trial by fire was characterized by fear, just like all of the other ones, but unfortunately what came along with this one was a lot of anger and a lot of grief. And I had to learn the hard way about commitment, courage, strength, and resolve. This time yesterday, I didn't really know what I was going to write my speech about, but I went to see a film in the New Zealand Film Festival, International Film Festival, is that what we call it?
Yeah.
It's called La Chana, and it's about a Spanish woman. She's 70 years old now, but she was a flamenco legend, flamenco dancing legend. And as I watched the film, I heard her talk about how she'd been very, very successful, but how eventually her very controlling and abusive husband left her. He made her retire, and then a few years later, he left her and he took all of their money. And she said she was 28 when this happened. No, 38. She was 38 when this happened. And all she did was sit on the couch for 2 years and stare at the floor. And I sat there and thought, I know exactly what that's like, because that's what happened to me when Sarah Potts died. In the time it takes to say, that's a wrap on Amanda, I lost a lot of things that I'd attached my sense of self-worth to. I lost a really big fat paycheck every week. I lost the experience of being given really great storyline consistently. I started to get burned by rejection. I got burned every time, and I was sort of yanked back into the past, every time someone had said Sarah or Shauna Street. I started to liken it. I realized one day when someone said to me, how is it? Like, he was a guy in a retail store. He said, how is it? And I said, it's kind of like when you had been married to this guy, let's call him Roger, for 10 years, and then he ghosts you one day and just moves out, takes all of your shit. And then, like, for the next 2 years, people walk down the street and they go, Roger! And they go, hey, didn't you used to be with Roger? Hey, you're Roger's ex, right? How is he? That's how I felt. And, but the biggest loss, actually, and this is my confession time, and this is partly what I have in common with these guys, in particular with you, Nathan, is that I lost the experience of feeling alive. Because what I realized when Sarah died, this person who was like, Kate and I were talking about it before we came in here, she said to her, it must have been like someone really close to you dying. And I said, yes, that's exactly what it was like. It was like one of my best friends suddenly disappeared when someone said, cut. And I realized that when Sarah Potts disappeared, this character that I played, who was this, that I'd poured all of my psyche into, I realized that I didn't know who I was, and that I had this big, there was this big void kind of inside of me. And I'd managed to fill it in and cover it over with her life and her emotional experiences, her relationships, her arguments with people, her growth or lack thereof. And now I was sitting there going, well, what do I, who am I? In retrospect, how do I know that it was a trial by fire? Well, I felt like I was in the middle of something I had no idea how to handle, and I'd had no choice. It was a trial by fire because it really, really hurt, because I was white hot with resentment sometimes, because sometimes I felt like ash. I was just gray and cold. But how do you fight fire? What do you do? What do you do with it? Yeah, you put it out, you can smother it, or you can use water. And this is inadvertently what I did, because I started to cry. I cried a lot. I feel like I want to cry now. These days, I cry quite readily. I probably cry the same amount that I did when I was a toddler. You know, when you're a little kid and you just, stuff pisses you off and you feel sad about it, so you go, ah! Well, I don't do it quite that loudly, but I have my moments. And I'm increasingly unapologetic about it. And that's something that I'm really grateful for. Because I let things touch the inner most parts of me, the parts of me that before I think were kind of cold or quite closed. Now they're open and they're warm, and sometimes they're actually red hot, but that's great because that's what feelings are like sometimes. Sarah dying was like being thrown on a funeral pyre. Part of me died too. And for a long time, every reminder of her or the show made me feel like I was frozen. And I pretended that I was fine, but that was just total PR. But last year in April, I saw a post on Instagram about a 100-day project. And I'd done one of these a few years earlier. But I discovered that 100-day project was going to help me with commitment, and it was going to help me with consistency and patience. But the way it did that was through connection. Because last year I did a 100-day project that was photographs of people. And what started as portrait sessions with people, one-on-one, where we'd have these really great conversations and about, you know, life and love and pain and hardship and all of that opening up type stuff. It started there and it ended there as well, but along the way, things like photographing the Battle of the Bands came up and photographing the New Zealand Dance Company came up and doing all of this stuff where I got to be with other artists, people, dancers and singers and musicians who were really living in the moment, and I really started to come alive. This year's one is about painting, which is part of the reason why I'm painting and why I had to get a studio, because I decided I was going to paint every day, and after about a week I was like, I gotta get out of my fucking house. So I put a call out, I guess, to the universe, for want of a better expression, and eventually, you know, I found somewhere really close to where I live as well for not a hell of a lot of cash. So it's great. It's all really great. I've lost my place in my... Oh, yeah. The other thing that I really loved about La Chana is the reason why I was going to see a documentary about a flamenco dancer is that I took my first flamenco dance lesson on Tuesday evening. Everybody? Yeah, I'm going to get the skirt. They're making me one. Okay, can't wait to have, like, the shoes. They've got nails in the bottom of them. They're not, like, tap shoes. They actually have tacks that are hammered into the bottom of them. They have these little silver dots all over the toe and the heel. And, you know, I want to, like, do the whole... Because the thing about flamenco is that... What did I say to you, Kate? We were talking about that as well. I said it's kind of like if you're hot and intense and really bright, it's the point. And that's what flamenco's about. I love the way flamenco even has the word flame in it, which has nothing to do with what the word means. But... When you, like, can you picture flamenco dancers? They're hot, they're fast. They almost look like they're on fire. And they are all of the, the reason why I think I want to do something like that is because we love, the thing about flamenco, when you picture a woman who's doing flamenco, is that she's not smiling. She's not trying to cheer everybody up. What she's doing is saying, I'm alive and this is happening and I'm beautiful and this is a little bit dark and noisy and loud, but this is what life is like. And La Chana, the woman who the documentary is about, she talks about how the soul is like a flame and that love is a flame that lives in you and burns forever. And so I like to think that these trials by fire that we go through are just, they're meant to bust us open. And they're meant to be like, you know those, are they some kind of Australian eucalyptus kind of seed pod that only opens when there's a forest fire? Have you heard of those? That the temperature has to get so hot, that's the only way that tree can grow. And I think that that's what happens to us, and that's certainly what happened to me. And like Nathan, I'm really grateful for that really shitty, hard to talk about, but somehow, once you've confessed it, experience. So thank you for listening.
Amanda, do you want to bring your it must be for one of those things, I guess, that because you're so well known for playing Sarah,
yeah,
that people ask you about all the time, which must be a very hard thing when you're like trying to deal
it's
with
it's okay
the,
now
yeah
the thing about that doco that made me think, I was like, yeah, that's what I did. I sat on the couch for 2 years. It took 2 years. Someone had said to me that it would take that long.
Yeah.
I even sort of thought to myself that it might take that long. And it did.
Mm.
And then after 2 years, I kind of felt like I'd kind of gone, I don't know, what do they call it? The statute of limitations had expired on my Sarah Pottsness.
Yeah.
Now I don't mind it so much.
Do you still miss her?
I miss having the opportunity to play a character who had... what am I trying to say? Yes, I do, and no, I don't. Mm. I think Shortland Street, which for anybody who's listening out there and doesn't live in New Zealand, it's like a medical kind of soap opera. And I played a character who was like every girl. So she was a hero. She was a little bit weird. She was bolshy. She was... she had a lot of energy. Mm. And because I'm kind of more like her now, I don't miss that anymore. Because right. I'm like, yeah, I got enough kind of drama and excitement in my own life now,
right,
so it's great. But from an acting point of view, yeah. Because she was the sort of character that they gave really juicy storylines to.
Yeah.
Like, or they always gave her really great shit.
Yeah.
On a regular basis.
Right.
Which sometimes was quite tiring, but I always knew. It was a good thing about having been there, because I was on the show for 10 years. Yeah, long time. Like a quarter of my life. Yeah, when I left, I was 38 years old. And it had been my entire professional life as well. When I walked out the door, I felt like I was kind of being born again as a little baby actress who had to like learn how to audition again. Mm. And you know, but now she's 38, so now she's like playing. I don't know. It was just weird.
Yeah. Do you think as well that the writers at Shortland Street, they get to know you? And you, like you kind of, the lines between being the character and being yourself become a little bit blurry?
I don't know. No, I don't know. I think I was probably well cast from the beginning.
Right.
And she is quite a, I don't know, not exactly a conventional person, but I don't know that she was hard to write for. Mm. In a way, that's more of a question for a writer. But it's likely that the script writers or the dialogue writers anyway, if they'd watched the show enough, they probably saw me and heard me when they were writing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
I would love to have one day, like I know now how lucky I am to have had that role,
mm-hmm.
to be able to work as an actress and play the same person for such a long period of time. And so that they actually start to have their own sense memory, you know? Like, she really got into my mind and my nervous system, you know?
Right.
And, like, not in a weird, freaky kind of alien way, but that sort of stuff doesn't happen very often when you're an actor, and there are downsides to it, for sure, but looking back now, I'm like, if that's as good as it gets, then... for me, then cool, because I had an incredible opportunity, and I think I knew it at the time. That made it easier to deal with it, and I think it would have been much worse if I'd not been able to appreciate while I was there,
right.
how cool it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hmm. Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome. Thanks
Super
for listening.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, guys. Amanda Guy. Thank you, everyone, for coming along to the water cooler 40th. There's so many, so many. What's the next thing?
Bullshit.
Bullshit!
What
yes! Next theme is bullshit. And we hope to see you all soon. Thank you so much for being here. Woo!